Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, Giannis is ready for a new home. Hopefully you are ready for us to talk about Giannis's potential new homes. We're going to talk about landing spots, if the Bucks should make a move, how quickly they should make it, who the major players are, and potential dark horses. After that, we talk about the Houston Rockets. Objectively, a very good team. Also, a team with some loud limitations. We talk through what those limitations are, how they could be solved. And we just have a fun conversation digging into the nuts and bolts of the Houston Rockets. And from there, we preview the upcoming slate of Unrivaled games. They are in Philadelphia for the Friday night slate. First time they're taking the show on the road. We preview those matchups. We bounce around the league with general thoughts. And I have some lineup stats for the first time. We're going to have some fun talking through those. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Ready to talk some basketball, Nikias.
We have plenty of basketball to get to. It is Deep Dive Friday. We're going to be talking about the Houston Rockets, which I am very excited about this conversation. I feel like we both have a lot of thoughts and have been teasing a lot of thoughts about the Rockets as of late. We're going to dig in. But first, so Steve, we talked about Giannis a little bit on Tuesday. And I was just kind of like, hey, this makes me sad. It kind of feels like we're reaching the end of the road here. These comments are feeling kind of weird. I don't know where it's going to go. And I'll be darned, within 24 hours, we get a tweet from Shams Charania. And I quote, Giannis is ready for a new home, which means he still has technically not requested the trade, Steve. But he's open to moving, which appears
it seems
to be.
Like you're it seems like you're annoyed by the language. I'm not sure why.
It's, I guess, more amused. Like, if your bit is, I am not going to press the button, but I'm going to hover my hand over the button. I'm going to, like, tap the button. I'm going to, like, write, like, my initial on the button, but I'm not going to press it all the way down. Like, it is just kind of funny to me that he's able to stay true. But now we're here. And so on a baseline level, Steve, I'll ask, if you are the Milwaukee Bucks, one, would you trade Giannis? Because I think there is also a rule of thought or a train of thought that this is one of, if not the greatest player in franchise history. We don't know if or when we will ever get another guy this good. There are plenty of Bucks fans that I follow and know that are just like, this is Giannis. If he leaves a free agency in a year and a half, then let him leave. I am not going to give up this guy if I don't have to. He brought us a championship multi-time. Like, why am I being the one to give away Giannis? And then there's also the other.
I don't know how I feel about that part of the logic, because letting him walk and you get nothing back is just, well, it's over. That's going to be a pretty hard pill to swallow. I don't know if you want to live through that. If you haven't enjoyed the last 2 to 3 years, we made an attempt to try and get as much talent as we could around Giannis this offseason. We built the offense around highlighting Giannis and having more movement and putting him in different places. And it has not worked. What else are you supposed to do? Where else are you supposed to go? How else is this supposed to work? It's just time. Mm-hmm. It's just time. That's part of life. I don't know what to tell you.
No, I think that part is fair. I guess just the line of thought, like even when like LeBron originally left Cleveland and stuff like that, like you can get into sign and trade stuff to get picks or whatever. But I guess the general thought is like, if I have someone this great, it means this much. I'm not giving him away on purpose. Like, I do understand the fan sentiment of that. But to your point, it does feel like this is time. It's clear that Giannis kind of feels like we have reached the end of the road here. And the fact that we are getting reports that the Bucks are now seriously entertaining calls at this point is certainly a shift in what the messaging has been. Which brings me to the second bit with Giannis that I'll ask you. If you are Milwaukee, are you comfortable making a move before the deadline? Would you have these teams tossing these offers at you? Or does it make more sense to wait until the offseason to make something happen?
In my opinion, I think you need to strike now. Because if you wait until the offseason, it makes a lot of sense. We can know more of who has what draft picks. we, you know, can make different moves. We can prepare and plan for it. You are now risking Giannis being like, well, I have not formally requested a trade. Knock, knock, knock on the door. Here's where I'd like to play. Because guess what, buddy? I don't have a long-term contract. And that team that trades, whatever they're going to trade to you, needs to know I'm going to stay. And these are those teams, slides paper under door. You run that risk of minimizing your return if you're only able to negotiate with two or three teams. So I think you should work as hard as you can to try and pull the band-aid off now and see what you can get. Because if you think about it, Nikias, I'd ask you this question. How many teams do you think have been preparing for Giannis to leave Milwaukee at some point?
It feels like the answer is yes. You ask around the league, but in a series note, like, it's got to be five or six at minimum. And like, we've been alerted to four of them, kind of flow into that next part of the conversation. We know Miami in particular has been waiting and waiting and waiting for, like, hey, we will give up a lot of stuff for Dame. We're not giving up everything. We'll give up a lot of stuff for KD, but not everything. We don't really want to get into the Ja thing unless this is the price point. James Harden, cool. We don't really want to give up a lot of stuff to get this. Giannis has been like one of the two or three names to where you imagine, okay, if he ever becomes available, whatever our best offer is, you will actually get that from us this time because he meets the threshold. And that, I think that takes us to an interesting place.
Well, I guess it kind of flows into a different thing. How many teams are going to be willing to swing the bat mid-season with their best offer? I think you'd probably say Miami, right? Outside of Miami, it's not that teams don't have good packages. Do they want to do it right now? If you're the New York Knicks, do you want to make that swing right now? Or do you want to figure this out? If you're Golden State, you might have a higher incentive. Do you have enough right now? If you're Minnesota, do you want to go all in that Western Conference with the season that you've had and you just beat the Thunder? So we do get into that territory of, yes, this is Giannis Antetokounmpo. This is one of the top players in the NBA. This is someone you swing everything for. But do we need to do that right now? Do we have to? Like, can we do that in the summer? You think that's where it gets interesting. And I think to me, in my brain, it comes, does Miami have enough? Because I feel like they're the team that's willing to put everything on the table as opposed to a New York or a Golden State who may want to put everything on the table. Milwaukee's like,
No, I think that's fair. And I think to the Minnesota portion in particular, because I think Miami feels like the major player in this. We are willing to do it all. Does Milwaukee think we have enough? And if Milwaukee doesn't think we have enough, okay, are we moving Andrew Wiggins to a third team to get a younger guy or some picks to then send to Milwaukee? Are we adding Norm Powell? Are we adding Tyler Hero to do similar things? And I think this week we get to that kind of conversation. With Minnesota, they are in such an interesting spot because on one side of the coin, we have Anthony Edwards, who, if he's not a top five player, he is certainly ascending to that very soon. And we can pair him with Giannis Antetokounmpo. We're probably not going to sign a guy like that in free agency. We can trade for Giannis, and there is, like, you know, per Sam Amick, there is at least a level of interest in Giannis being a teammate of Anthony Edwards. It has a respect level there. If we have the opportunity to do this, why would we not try to do this? On the other side, because of how Minnesota's contract situation is set up and down the roster, in order to pull that off, like, you're looking at two of Julius Randle, or two or three of Julius Randle, Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, Rudy Gobert, including like a third team or something, to be able to pull that off. And from there, it's just like, yes, Giannis is better than any of those individually. And the duo of Ant and Giannis, as I tweeted, would move me tremendously. And I would imagine Minnesota would be interested in that. Is it worth getting Giannis if we have to get rid of Julius Randle and also Jaden McDaniels? You could argue yes. You could also argue no, considering who's like behind those guys. Like, it's a tougher conversation than it is on the surface, I think.
So why would Ant and Giannis move you tremendously? I'm very curious here. I'd like to hear more because I'd actually like to power rank. How much would Nikias Duncan be moved by different destinations?
Oh, we can do that. I think on a baseline level, again, you're talking about Giannis, who when healthy has been a top three player in the sport as recently as this season. and Anthony Edwards is ascending. And I think their two-man game could be pretty devastating. I think Ant's ability to get to the rim, finish, free throw, get to the free throw line, the growing mid-range game that we've talked about. And, like, selfishly, I think Ant is a very good interior passer. We don't get to see it as often because of those pick and rolls with Rudy Gobert. I'll just take this big dog. You're putting two on the ball, let me just sling this to the wing versus trusting you with a short roll opportunity. Not consistently anyway. I think with Giannis, he would access that part of his game a little bit more. And I think defensively, when Ant is locked in, he's very good defensively. When Giannis is locked in, he is very good defensively. Giannis, a former defensive player of the year on top of that. And so if you do have a situation to where you have Ant, you have Giannis, and if Rudy stays in this deal, and you're talking more about moving Randall, Nas, Jaden McDaniels, two of those three, however you get build that package out. Like, that defense is absurd. You have baked in offense with Ant and Giannis. When Ant goes to the bench, you still have Giannis. When Giannis goes to the bench, you still have Ant. I just love that context. And I love the way that those two could potentially play off of each other. So I would be excited about that one.
If you're the New York Knicks and you've built this up and you have an opportunity at Giannis, do you swing for the fences? Do you do that? Do you bring him into what you've built this year and say, yep, now we have Jalen Brunson and we have Giannis. Deal with it. Does that move you at all?
It does. I just wonder how they get it done. Because I think from a salary perspective, New York can get there pretty easily. But it's also like, okay, teams would be interested in Mikal Bridges, I think. Would they be interested enough? Because I don't know if Milwaukee will want Mikal. I think they would want to trend younger, if I had to guess. Do other teams want Mikal enough to give New York two or three firsts to send to Milwaukee? That part I don't know. I think from the Knicks' perspective, if we can turn Karl Anthony Towns in his salary slot, and he's obviously very good, but this has been an up and down season, don't know when he's going to close games, don't know what the touch is going to look like, et cetera. If we could turn the Cat roster spot into Giannis, we are doing that 12 out of 10 times. Do other teams feel high enough on Cat to give enough stuff that could be sent to Milwaukee? That part I don't know. So, like, I think New York would be willing to do it. I just don't know how realistic it is, at least midseason.
Understood. And they're in a good position. I think they're one of those teams where it's like, you're the two seed right now. Are you going to break apart what has made you the two seed to get Giannis for, you know what I mean? Are you going to kick the can down the road? I'm not sure. It's a tough decision to make. Do you have a dark horse that should swing for the fences for Giannis Antetokounmpo? Because we've talked about these four teams. I think they make the most logical sense to a certain degree. But is there a team that should go all in? Because I'm looking at Atlanta, and Atlanta is probably like, hey, do not call us. We have traded Trae Young. We have Jalen Johnson. And we have your picks. So, no, absolutely not. Leave us alone. don't talk to us. Not today. Cleveland got a lot going on. Philadelphia got a lot going on. You look at that team like, would Phoenix? No, Phoenix, we just did all that. No, we're not doing that. We just rebuild all this.
we're fine.
We're good. Portland, hey, no. We also have your stuff. So at what part does the market drop? You know what I mean? Like, is there a dark horse that we're not thinking of that would be like, you know what? Like, if you're Charlotte, would you just be calling off the hook right now? Like, hey, I don't know how we can do it, but you interested? You in? Hello?
I mean, apparently there have already been some Charlotte-Milwaukee talks, like non-Giannis division, and I hate that for Milwaukee. I would just leave that there. I would say as far as dark horses go, like, Philadelphia's been mentioned by Sam Amick, and, like, that intrigues me. That just becomes, like, how willing is Philly to make that swing? Because, like, obviously you're not getting rid of Tyrese Maxey. I don't think Philly wants to trade Joel Embiid, nor will Milwaukee be taking Joel Embiid back in a trade like this. And so you kind of start the bidding with VJ Edgecombe, who we both talked about being top three in our rookie ladders. He is very good now. He is going to be even better in the future, barring injury. Are we willing to punt on the VJ Edgecombe and or Jared, not even or, probably and Jared McCain experience to build a package around getting Giannis in the building? I don't know if Philadelphia would do that. From a talent perspective, you could make the argument because this is still Giannis. If you're telling me I'm going into a playoff series with Tyrese Maxey, Giannis, and Joel Embiid, I'm feeling pretty darn good. But I don't think Philly would want to do that. Like, Cleveland is the team that I keep coming back to. Because I think if they are very much, we have Donovan Mitchell, we are ready to win. Between Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, and I would imagine Mobley would probably have to be the headliner or something like this. Cleveland loves Evan Mobley, so I don't think they would do it. But if they got to that point where it's like, actually, we could probably make this swing. And if we have enough like high level playoff questions about the Mobley offense, if we sell high-ish on him and get Giannis in the building, and now it's Donovan Mitchell plus Giannis, they could get in the conversation if they want to. And then the other team I'd mention out east, like Toronto just has the salaries. They have the picks. If they want to build something around Colin Murray Boyles plus other salary plus all of the first, they can do that. Is that enough for Milwaukee? I'm not sure. But they could at least have an earnest conversation with Milwaukee, I think.
Well, I'm looking through my emails and my notes. I do have to bring one team up currently right now. Could the Los Angeles Lakers come into the conversation?
Yeah, that feels more like a summer thing to me. It's like, and here's the thing. I wish I could remember where I saw the tweet. It was like laying out a literal like pathway if you're talking about the offseason, because the Lakers are going to have so much cap space. And like in a literal sense, they could just absorb the Giannis contract in the summer with whatever first they have left. And I'm just like, yes, in a literal sense, that is true. And if Giannis says, I want to go here specifically, there's at least some incentive for Milwaukee to do that. If the Lakers get Giannis and Luka Doncic within like an 18-month period, in one of those deals, is Giannis not going back with like Austin Reeves and all the stuff? Like, hey, the head is tilting. You can't do that. But all jokes aside, like, I'm sure the Lakers are going to call at the very least. I don't think they have enough right now. And if this does get to the summer, and I was thinking about this a little bit earlier, Steve, we've had conversations about how many teams we think have a pathway to make a run in the West, could make a Western Conference Finals. Like, at minimum, that's probably five, right? And you can argue, yeah, like, you can add the Lakers into the mix, you can add the Warriors into the mix, maybe. Like, you can get there with a bunch of different pathways. If we set the bidding at five teams, or if we just say the top six right now all have a pathway to the Western Conference Finals if healthy, at least two of those are losing in the first round.
Yeah.
Like, the smoke might rise a little bit if this gets to the summer. Like, if Houston, who we're going to talk about, loses in the first round. If San Antonio, if you want to talk about dark horses, as we've talked about plenty, they got De'Aaron Fox without giving up any of the top tier stuff. If the Spurs lose in the first round, they could absolutely walk in and say, okay, cool, one of Castle or Harper. We've got salary. We still got picks. Say no, we dare you. Houston Rockets could do a similar bit. So it's just like, I think the teams in the East, they got to hope, you know, between the Knicks, the Heat, hey, we want to make the swing right now. We want to try. Please answer our phone calls. We will do what we need to do. We'll send Mikal elsewhere. If we have to include OG, the Knicks certainly wouldn't want to do that. But like, if we got to do this, sure. Miami, as we talked about, they're probably willing to toss in a little bit of everything to get this done. We want to get this done, because if this gets to the summer, I am terrified of what the West market might look like in Giannis conversations.
Well, I'll ask this question. Do you think they should do it now or wait? You ask me, I'll throw it right back to you.
I think it makes sense for Milwaukee to wait. I understand, like, let's rip the Band-Aid off now. We're already bad. And like, as you mentioned, their pick this year is a bit compromised. Like, there is a swap situation, but like, there's still an ability if they pick get swapped, if they're bad enough, they're still going to be probably in like the top five, top six anyway. So they can still have a high pick in this year's draft. And this one is setting up to be a very good one. But yeah, I would kind of want the market to open up and say, okay, who else can get in here? Because this
is it truly going to open up though? I don't want to play there. Sorry.
This is like, you're not wrong, but like, we are not too far removed from like the Damian Lillard stuff, where it's very clear he wanted to go to Miami. And Miami's like, well, we'll give you this, but not all of this. And Milwaukee's like, well, shoot, we'll toss in. we'll do this. All it now, takes is that one.
How'd that end?
Well, it ended with Dame going back.
Where's Damian Lillard at right now? Who are we talking about getting traded right now? How'd that end? You say you know that off right now, buddy.
I'm just saying, we do have a level of precedence for this. And shoot, I mentioned Toronto a little bit earlier. Like, I think Kawhi had, what, two teams on his list, if that? And Toronto's like, well, shoot, we'll just take the swing. They won a title. He left anyway. And it's like, well, hey, That kind of stinks. We want the title, though. And so we do have precedence for our team is good. We will try to convince you. You are a top three player. We want to get you in the building. So, like, worst case scenario, like, there is room there.
That's fair. That's fair. The precedence is there. The aftermath, we could talk about it later. It's fine. Speaking of aftermath, after this break, we are going to talk about the Houston Rockets and have a time. So don't blast off. Stick with us.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to talk about the Houston Rockets, who, as of recording, 29-17 record. They're fourth in the Western Conference. A 119.3 offensive rating. That's fifth in the league per clean the glass. A 112.1 defensive rating. That is third in the league per clean the glass. And a plus 7.2 net rating. That is also third in the league. The Houston Rockets, very clearly a very good basketball team. The Houston Rockets also have some limitations that are worth exploring when you talk about their level of contention that they could have in this conference. How deep can they go in the West Conference, at least as presently constructed, which Fred VanVleet still out. We'll see if he's back later this season. Steven Adams officially out for the season, so they're going to have to sort through that if they want to make another move. If this just simply means more Clint Capella, we'll see what happens on that front, but did want to mention that on the injury front. Steve, I think it is fair to start with the offense with this conversation.
Yeah.
Because I think it is very well established, especially since Ime Udoka took over as the head coach. This Houston Rockets defense has been good since he's been there. It is the strength of their defense. We're going to talk about some of the particulars of what makes their defense strong, of course, so we're not going to ignore that. But the offense seems to be a real conversation point right now. And it has been a conversation point on this very podcast as we've sprinkled in Houston thoughts throughout the year. It's like, hey, they've been in the top five all year long. We've highlighted how good Kevin Durant is, how good Alperen Şengün is. For me, it's also been like, hey, they don't really take threes. This is kind of weird. This is a whole lot of offensive rebounding. And you were kind of like, well, hey, you probably just want to make shots anyway. Like, what does this really mean when we get to the playoff context? So you have some stuff. So I guess just kind of broadly speaking, Steve, like, where do you want to start with this Houston offense? Is this some of the high points, some of the question marks? What do you think is most appropriate here?
Well, I mean, I think you lay it out at first and understand what this team is trying to accomplish offensively. And how they can kind of be good in a way that doesn't necessarily make sense statistically. This is a team that can execute in the half court. They can be methodical. They can punish you and with their defense when they're getting stops. And even if they feel slow offensively, they're able to kind of put themselves in a position to just kind of extend leads and control tempo that way, which is a positive. The issue, I think, for me is, how much tempo do you want to have? How many times do you turn on a Rockets game and look at their offense and the first action comes with 14 seconds on the shot clock? Sometimes that can help you, and that should help them in a playoff series in theory, because we know what we want to get to. But how often do you want to do that in the regular season? And how many times can you really generate good shots? I think when it comes to Houston, they have decent principles when it comes to moving the ball and attacking when they have movement. The issue is a lot of that comes off stops. And you get to a position where it's like, okay, how many times are we getting some like two on the ball? How many times are we getting a team to rotate? How many times are we really putting ourselves in pressure? So we get a stop, we're going to attack. We're going to push on the other end. And we put ourselves in a position where now you're scrambling to try and find something. We get you in rotation. We move the ball. We swing it. That doesn't look like Houston Rockets basketball in the half court, but they have it in them. But can they find a way to generate that in the half court is the biggest thing. Can they find a way to put pressure on teams to where there's a cut, they get a pop, you rotate, try and fly around, we get another drive. Can we win a drive, get a closeout? Can we do those things consistently? I think is where you start with it. So you can have the blend and the contrast of Houston being able to be a force, being able to attack early, and then you layer in what Kevin Durant brings to the table, who's been fantastic all year as far as punishing teams, and you bring in Alperen Şengün, what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to your point, Steve, mentioned fifth in offensive rating. They're ninth in transition offense. They are 19th in half-court offense, slightly below league average on that front. So to your point, they are at their best when they are able to get stops. And again, this defense has been elite this year. and they're able to kind of flow early. You get the early attacks, you get more of the catch and shoot opportunities, and this is a Houston Rockets team, as alluded to earlier, they're not a team that takes a lot of threes to begin with. So when they do get their shots from the perimeter and they're able to create them early in the clock, those are generally higher quality looks. And to their credit, they have made threes at a high clip this year. It's just more so we're not taking a ton of them. To your half court point, was getting the numbers very quickly. 21st in terms of how quickly they get the ball across half court on average. In terms of how quickly they get to their first action, bottom five in the league. In terms of how long their possessions last on average, dead last. It's not an impossible context to live in, but the bar is very high to be efficient within that context. If you are going to operate that slowly or that methodically, you have to knock down shots at a high clip. And ideally, you're also getting a good shot diet on top of that, which is where, again, some of my concerns kind of come in on that front. But they do have it in them. Like, even with some of the stuff that they run in the half court, like dummy pick and roll that flows into, like, Jabari coming off of a stagger or KD coming off of a stagger and then being able to play out of that, especially when KD's involved with how often he's getting two on the ball with some of his touches in the middle of the floor. Like, that's where you can get to some good stuff. I've enjoyed the empowering of Amen Thompson. We're going to talk a lot more about him. As of late, they're just sprinkling in more of these handoffs and more of these pick and rolls for Jabari Smith Jr. to showcase, like, I can get to pull-ups whenever I want to. I have a little bit of passing ability there, nothing super advanced, but I can get to basic reads to keep things going. And in general, we've talked about this with a lot of teams, Steve. If we have other guys that can initiate, we can now get our best players off the ball and get them in position to where they are taking advantages if the guy that's initiating, your Amen Thompsons, your Jabari Smith Jr.'s, Reed Shepard when he comes in. I have thoughts on Reed a little bit later as well. But if any of those guys can puncture the paint or something like that or get two on the ball in any context, now it's KD against a closeout. Or if he drives and now it's a dump off to Alperen Şengün, who's just kind of roaming around. Like, they have ways to get to good stuff. They just don't get to it consistently enough for me.
Well, here's the thing. And as we roll through Jabari Smith Jr. clips, you think about how he looked when teams go over, or we can get the defense to go over. When he can get an over in pick and roll and his defender is chasing him, he's able to attack space, as you highlighted so well, it changes things when he has the patience. Teams want to go under, but when he gets that over, now you get the roll aspect of it. Now you get him getting downhill. You get more of that aspect. That's the key for Houston. I think when you talk about, and we're going to wait on Amen, but Jabari, Reed, Amen, they have to figure out the reads and the patience to understand, okay, how do I set this up so I can get this over so our offense can now have that pick and roll aspect. We can force help. I can either get downhill, get to my shot, or I can make a skip pass and play. Versus just, okay, it's an under. Now we're looking. Now I got to get to Alpi or KD, and now we're off the ball. I think that's where it gets tricky for those guys in different moments. And I think when you look at it in totality, right, how many times do you watch those guys play, Nikias, and it's like, ooh, they have it going, self-created basket, one-on-one play. How much of it is generated by their reads, and how much of it is just we have it going tonight? I think that's where it gets tough, because Houston, in theory, should be a team where it's like, ooh, what are they going to do against switches, right? Mm-hmm. They're still just getting outright unders, like just don't care, under, slide, whatever. So can we get to the rescreens? Can we get downhill? Can we get a second attack and put ourselves back in a position to have an advantage? I think that's the biggest thing that those three are going to have to do during the stretch of the season to prepare for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd say quickly on the Jabari front, he's run 79 pick and rolls this year. All of last season, he did miss a bunch of time. But including the playoffs, he ran 56. The efficiency numbers have skyrocketed from this year compared to last year. So, like, again, there's a little bit there. 0.94 points per possession if you want the actual number. Just hovering around league average. That's fine for him. I guess for me, like, I'll kind of toss this question to you as someone that was around, like, the Grizzlies. Like, how do you kind of balance, we want to lead with our defense, we want these games to be slower without being too slow? Like, what is the line, or how do you kind of approach finding that line for, we want to control the possession game, which flows into the offensive rebounding and overall physicality that Houston plays with. But also, if we get below this, we are easier to guard. We are now in transition defense where Houston hasn't been very good. Quiet is kept. Like, how do you find that balance?
Being a defense-first team is tough because, in theory, you don't actually want to play offense the way you're playing. You just understand this gives us our best shot. So if we're able to get stops consistently, we know we have a little bit of wiggle room. Offensively, you like a little bit of tempo, but at the same time, you don't want to go too quick because, to your point, you say, okay, we're playing too slow. We're in transition. If we start playing too fast, now we're in transition. We're not controlling tempo anymore. I think the biggest thing when you're a defense first team is you have to have your pillars. You have to have your, okay, this is my go-to sets. We know what we're running. We know how we're going to be defended. We play out of that. I think that's why the Kevin Durant, Alperen Şengün two-man game and the evolution of that is so important for Houston because they can lean on that in tough times to where, okay, I know maybe it's 18 on the clock. I can find Kevin Durant. I can get a pick and roll. We can put someone in action. And I'm either going to get a pull-up or I'm going to get Şengün on the short roll. I'm going to make the defense think about what we're doing. And that's where if you're a defense-first team, you have to have that kind of flow. We can use Kevin Durant and get him off a stagger. And now we can run a pick and roll. And so even if those possessions are where we're deep in the clock, 10 on the clock, we feel better about it because our two best players are involved. Now, the key is your two best players have to produce. And that's where it can get interesting sometimes. Because you're gonna be in a position where those guys, it doesn't necessarily matter what the coverage is, but both of them have to be in that kind of space. And so KD, to its credit, and why I've said he's been so important to this Houston team, it doesn't matter what you do defensively against him. He's going to figure out how to be Kevin Durant. That's why he's been so good. The question now becomes, is Alperen Şengün going to hit those same levels? Not that he's not played well, but when you watch Şengün and he's looking to attack, he's looking to go one-on-one, how many times do you see the defense double? And you will have the stat, I'm sure, but I feel like it's gone down as the season has progressed. The drives that we liked at the early at the start of the season were fantastic, but if teams are going to stay home and this now becomes, did you score or not? That puts us in a different position than where we were when we were there early. And so how do we kind of navigate and handle that, especially as teams are going to put wings on Alperen Şengün. Teams are going to switch against Alperen Şengün. Teams are going to put guards on Alperen Şengün. Salute to Stephon Castle and what he did. Now you have to win those matchups for us or else we are in a different spot. You know, we're counting on you as a pillar, right? We're counting on you to be able to get a bucket, to force rotation, to force a double. Earlier in the season when he was getting doubled, you had the mix, you had the blend. If it's going to be guard on you, go ahead, try. We're going to stay home or we're going to show help off Amin. It's tough.
No, I think that's fair. I think to the KD Şengün two-man game, I want to bounce off of everything you said there because that was great stuff. One of the things that I want to make sure that I looked at was, okay, what exactly is KD and Şengün doing when they're in the two-man actions? And what does it look like when we get to the fourth quarter, when we get into some of the late offense looks in particular? And so it was noteworthy to me overall. They're running about 15 picks per 100 possessions when it's KD and Şengün. Obviously less than that when it's Şengün KD. But with KD and Şengün in action, in pick and roll, 0.97 points per possession, that is fine. You get to the fourth quarter, that drops to 0.87 points per possession. They're seeing switches on 20% of those. They are seeing two on the ball at a pretty high rate on those, but I think that is more to your point. That's more KD. Let's get the ball out of his hands. Now let's see what Şengün does. Or you get into some of the two on the ball, pre-rotate, now it turns into an isolation possession for Alperen Şengün. And this is where, and one of the things that I've kind of harped on as someone that has enjoyed the Şengün season overall this year, you know how high I've been on him, the finishing does just kind of have to hit a certain level with him. And to this point of the season, like, it has been sub-elite when you're talking about what he's doing inside of, like, 6 feet or so. Especially when you're looking at just the half-court possessions in particular. And when you get late in games to the point, like, hey, did you make the shot? Like, it is funny to see some of the post-ups against Victor Wembanyama where he's just this the herky-jerky post-up. I'm getting the weird, lean, hooking shot over him to get it to go. Those are still tough looks. And if those don't fall, that is not only a miss, that is a miss at the rim. And with Houston being as good as they are on the offensive glass, they do still try to generally clear a little bit more space when it's the Şengün attacks in particular. So you're missing at the rim. You're not getting the offensive rebound chances, which further bleeds into the Rockets haven't been the best transition defense in the league this year. I think 12th in frequency allowed, but in terms of the points per possession number, it is not where they want it to be. And so it is more on Alperen Şengün, as simplistic as the analysis could be. You kind of got to make more shots, big dog. Like, the talent is there. But if you don't, that puts a lot more pressure on Kevin Durant, who has his own, like, obviously one of the best scorers we've ever seen, but something that I've talked to you about before. hey, teams get grabby with him off the ball, and Houston already plays slow, and so now you're trying to run something for Kevin Durant. It takes a while for you to get across half court. It takes a while for KD to even get off the screens, and by the time he catches the ball, he's getting pushed out, and now he's facing the set defense. Like, some of that is just inherent KD limitation, but it's also like that's not a fair spot for him to be put in all the time. And so I'm just kind of intrigued to see how they build the boat from there.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. And I think it's it comes down to what teams are willing to do against those two and how can they operate and punish teams. Now, would we like to talk about Amen Thompson?
Yes. One of the most fascinating players in the league.
I know you have thoughts about Amen Thompson. I think it gets really interesting, especially when we look at that San Antonio game. A lot of people were like, hey, this is an indictment on Ime Udoka and coaching, and Amen Thompson's going to be a massive playoff problem. I think that undersells it a little bit. I think Amen Thompson is at his best when he is making quick decisions, when he's decisive, when he's aggressive. Teams are literally just saying, this is how we're going to guard you. And so we're going to give you a bunch of space that can, in theory, open up an attack, that can, in theory, open him up as a screener. We know Houston's going to use him as an off-ball screener or an on-ball screener to get him back to the dunker spot, make a guard, make a decision. I think the tricky part with San Antonio is they have Victor Wembanyama, and he allows you to make absurd rotations. But if you look at what like Amen does, like it's like once they put Wemby on Amen Thompson, it changed the game to a degree. And so if he's guarding Amen Thompson, okay, I'm playing off of you. These passes aren't easy. And now if you get to the corner or you get to the dunker spot, I'm Victor Wembanyama. I like being on the block. This is fantastic for our defense. And that's where it's like, okay, yeah, I understand the issue and the, hey, they're playing off of him like he's insert non-shooter here. But that's a very specific issue that that team can present to the Rockets. I don't know if you can duplicate that where Wemby's able to kind of double and muck everything up. And now you have the combination of the wing. I think that's where it gets tricky because we can put a wing on Şengün. We put Wemby on Amen. What are you running? How are you getting this done? And so I don't know if that's something everyone can duplicate because Amen's really good at cutting and floating around and getting downhill in different ways. It's just that level of, hey, we can do this against Şengün. We put a guard on him. Wemby's in his ideal spot. Your flashes and cuts don't hit the same. And he can still help. That was a different issue, I think, than just a pure, we can't execute in the half court. Not everyone has that guy on defense to be able to muck things up in that way, right? That was a very specific attack on the Houston Rockets because now you can't necessarily automatically say, well, Amen Thompson, go be a screener, right? Cool. He's rolling into Victor Wembanyama and he tried to take his head off, but how many times you want to do that, right, guys? So that's where it's like, okay, I understand the concern, but you gotta know that that's a different deal. That's more of the Spurs Rockets mini battle than everyone can do that.
Yeah, that's fair. Hence the tweet, because Amen caught that thing back to try to get Wemby. It's like, okay, this is a level of aggression. Like, that's what also kind of made me laugh. I have a very brief rant. So, like, on one hand, because, like, there were some shots passed up by Amen. He took 23 in the game. It wasn't like a, I am scared now. I am just not going to be involved in the offense whatsoever. Which brings me to, so, towards the end of the third quarter, Steve.
Oh, my.
You had a possession where KD walks across half court. Dylan Harper immediately comes with a double team. It's like, okay, they're getting the ball out of his hand. So, the ball finds Amen Thompson, who's being defended by Victor Wembanyama. And Amen is by himself and ends up dribbling and plays De'Aaron Fox in the corner with Jabari Smith. He's like, nah, I don't really care. And so Amen's like, all right, cool. What are we getting into? Eventually flows into a handoff with Kevin Durant. You briefly get two on the ball. Amen Thompson scores on this possession. It is worth noting that, you know, the dunk happens like 15 seconds left on the clock. So that was going to be the last offensive possession for Houston. They didn't have enough time to bleed it all the way down. But like, they play slow anyway. They want to bleed clock on top of that because of where the quarter was time-wise. And they ended up scoring. And the amount of clips and screenshots and tweets that I saw about that possession were like, that is the example of Amen Thompson being a problem in the half court and Ime Udoka's coaching is a problem. And when you get to the playoffs, they're not going to be able to score with this dude. One of the things that bugs me the most, Steve, you know this, long-term dunkers know this if you're new here. One of my most annoying things in basketball discourse is when people have a valid point or valid concern and they use an awful example to make the
point. Oh, my.
It burns me up. It's just like, yeah, it's like some of the scoring stuff at Amin, that could be a problem. A center on Amin, because it wasn't just Wimby, it was Luke Kornet too. That could be a problem. That can hem up things. If you put a wing on Alperen Şengün on top of that, we're just switching all the KD stuff with Alperen Şengün, and then you have the wrong. Like, yeah, that's a problem. Using the end of quarter possession in which the guy goes into a handoff with Kevin Durant, who gets two on the ball and they get a dunk out of it, is not the example I would use to highlight offensive problems. But that is just me. I just wanted to get that off of my chest. Now, to Amin Thompson, who I am a fan of, I think you nailed it in terms of some of this being Wimby specific, with how they want to keep him low on the floor and things like that. And I think putting that type of big on Amin Thompson in particular is a problem, because we're testing out, look, we don't care about your shooting. That's already big then. You mentioned a dunker spot rolling. Amin's very good at kind of mooching baskets around the dunker spot area. And through the team-wide impact for Houston, this is the best offensive rebounding team in the league, Steve. It's a lot easier to get offensive rebounds if you're already in the dunker spot and you're an insane athlete. If Victor Wembanyama is there, you're probably not getting as many of those rebounds if he's not, like, challenging the shot and taking himself out of the area, of course. And so, like, it's a two-pronged issue on that front. But I think when we talk about Amin, it's unfortunate that that game was as loud as it was, particularly in that second half. Because I've been watching Rockets games this month. Been watching this year, obviously. But, like, watching Rockets games this month, I tweeted out a couple weeks ago, you know, through the first 10 games of January, Amin Thompson's averaging 21 points per game, and he's converting 57% of his twos. And I'm, like, watching him in the half court in particular, and some of the mid-range shots that he was getting into, again, you're not going to confuse him with Kevin Durant, of course, but it's like, huh, he's operating a little slower in the middle of the floor now. He seems to be getting on balance more often. He's squaring up more consistently. Like, he is getting into more comfortable shots for himself. Is this enough to bend what defenses want to do to him? Like, no, not yet. There's just a volume, and you just got to keep doing it before the scouting report updates. So it's like, okay, this is encouraging, because the cutting's going to be there. The dunker spot stuff is going to be there. The transition scoring is going to be there. If he's more comfortable taking these types of shots, you at least have a baked-in counter once you get into the playoffs. And again, once you get to the postseason, you've said this all the time, Steve, the logic makes sense to help off of a non-shooter. If the ball goes in, the ball goes in. Like, those are just points on the board, and you may lose if he makes enough of those shots. So it's encouraging to see that. And so to have this, like, six-game stretch where it's gone the other way, and to have this Rocket-Spurs game in particular, where the second half got very muddy for him, it was unfortunate. I think the quieter part of the Amin situation for me is, like, you got to keep an eye on what the half-court scoring is for him. Like, some of the self-created looks for him on drives. Because, like, that's the portion for me that I want to see more consistency with when it comes to him. Like, the layups in particular. Because I feel like he's still trying to figure out, am I going off one? Am I going off two? He has, like, a bunch of Euro steps and different details in his bag. But, like, when am I deploying those? When I do see contact, like, am I leaning into the body? Am I ripping through the arm? Am I utilizing pump fakes and getting into that? Like, he's still trying to figure out that portion. I think if you are someone that teams are not afraid of from the perimeter, you can offset that with strong finishing and or foul drawing. And the fact that he doesn't have either of those to a consistent degree in the half court right now, that might be a bigger issue than the jumper itself. Because I think there are natural counters to, I'm on the perimeter, I can just flow in the handoffs with someone, to the KD example.
I think I would say, honestly, it's just about his patience and how he understands the space when teams are trying to work an under against him or they're trying to give him a gap. And I think you feel the weight and the loudness of that with Amin Thompson, to where, okay, the man's backed off at the elbow. I'm trying to run the set. Okay, how much does the set matter? Can I turn the corner and now it turns to a finish? That's really tough to guard when I do that, when I pass and cut. But how often is he going to get into that quick? And how often he's going to bounce out? Wait, now I've held the ball for 5 to 6 seconds. And even though I'm getting to a spot where I can kind of operate in mid-range, get a shot off, is that a positive for us? It now puts me in make or miss territory, where as opposed to I can just be a timely shot maker. And so I think if you're watching, you can see, okay, this has now had, he's had the ball for 8 seconds dribbling. No one's guarding him. And now he gets into a pull-up. And it doesn't feel as good as if he just went into it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of ties into where can we make some quicker decisions in these moments to put yourself in a stronger position?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. And like, this is also just part of the natural growth of Amen having the ball in his hands a lot more than he did last year. Like, he's had to take on more on-ball duties in general because Fred VanVleet is not there. And so some of this is just, he just has to get used to this. He just has to get better at this. Like, this is not the first time in his basketball life that he's been tasked with initiation. But doing so on an NBA scale, while also having to placate both Alperen Şengün and now Kevin Durant, who's on your team, it's like, yeah, man. Like, sometimes I just want to pass because I have these two dudes. You know what I mean? And this is also baked into Houston wants to play a little bit more deliberate on top of that. So some of this is just, we are getting to our offense. I am dribbling because no one is pressuring my handle and no one is pressuring my handle because teams don't fear my jumper. And so like all of this is kind of going through his brain, I would imagine. And so, no, it hasn't been as clean as you would want it to. And I think it is fair to have concerns about what level are we going to reach in year two of the postseason for Amen Thompson. Because if you remember the Warriors series, it took him a couple games to kind of figure out, okay, what exactly are my windows? What are my shots? What are my drives? How aggressive do I need to be? And again, this is a Rockets team that didn't have KD yet. But he eventually started to find that comfort. Wasn't always the most consistent production, but at the very least, he started to find that comfort. I think he's ultimately going to get there. Like, he's made strides compared to last season. But it's an interesting spot for him and the team to be in overall.
All right. So we talked a lot about the offense. And I'm sure you had other things you wanted to talk about. So, what else do you got? What do you want to dive into on the Rockets, Nekias?
Oh, man. Okay, we have to get to this defense. The one thing I would say, and I'll pose a quick question to you, because you mentioned Reed Shepherd a little bit earlier. How important is he to solving some of the half-court stuff for Houston offensively this year? Is it fair to put that level of burden on him to kind of be that X factor for them?
I wouldn't say so, because as much of a talent that he is, him playing well helps Houston. Does him playing well automatically make the defense do something different? He's not immune to unders, right? He's not immune to switches. He's not immune to two. He's not an automatic two on the ball. So yes, his pull-up game helps. His spacing helps. His shooting helps. Turning the corner, making plays helps. I wouldn't say that's the key to unlock Houston's offense, because if I'm an opposing coach, I know where the weak points are to a degree. And yeah, Reed Shepherd has the highest likelihood of making me pay in a fourth quarter. But that doesn't necessarily mean, hey, I'm going to put you in action on the other end, number one. And number two, I'm going to guard y'all how we've been guarding y'all. You got to make enough of these shots to make me think about doing this. And so I think he has the highest upside. I think he has the highest ceiling to help them. I don't know if it's an automatic to change what they do. Or how teams treat them.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Like, I think for me, I do think he is the X factor in this regard because of the shooting. Like, the ability itself is helpful. The gravity itself, I think, is helpful. Even if he's not a consistent two on the ball guy on the ball, like, he is someone that you have to close out to at the very least. And I think that greases the wheels. I've talked a little bit about earlier this year, like, I want to see more of Reed as a screener. He needs to get better at screening, and I think he has as the season has gone on, to be fair to him. But, like, I do want to see more of that usage to help unlock some of the star guys when he's out on the floor with them. Defensively, you would think, at the very least, Houston has the infrastructure to cover for everything that teams want to poke at with him, whether it's the size, it's the quickness. He does have quick hands. He is, I think, stronger than he looks, but at the same time, he is just going to be the smaller guy on the floor. So that part hurts. It is interesting, like, looking at some of the off data for PvP stats. Houston basically a +7 with him on. It's a +6 with him off. They're a good team. So it doesn't surprise me that they're winning the minutes when he's not on the floor. But they are better with him. And the defense has been slightly better with him on the floor versus off. Like, I think some of that is just the sample size. Some of that is who they are surrounding him with when he's on the floor. It makes sense to go more defensively slanted around him to cover for him. So that makes sense. But I've enjoyed watching him develop, his confidence continue to grow, his development in terms of like the two-man game with Şengün and with KD, which I'll quickly note, Steve, only 0.91 points per possession on Reed, KD pick and rolls overall this year. In the month of January, nearly 1.3 points per possession on those. They are really starting to catch a rhythm. KD, I've really talked about the screening. The KD screens have kind of surprised me this year. Like, he's actually, he's hitting people on some of those. And you really feel those with the Reed pick and rolls with him in particular. But, like, KD hits someone, and if it's a drop, Reed doesn't mind getting all the way downhill or flowing into pull-ups. If you switch, Reed can take a bigger guy off the bounce. Or, hey, that's Kevin Durant. I'm just giving you the ball and getting out of the way. Do you want to send help? Because if you do, that might be Reed taking a shot or attacking the closeout, and then you're off to the races on that front. And so, like, that feels like something baked in that's growing more chemistry and getting a little bit more dangerous. So if we're talking about late game stuff, I think Reed could be a part of that. And, like, kind of bouncing off of the I'm in situation, I do wonder, as we get closer to the postseason or when we get into the postseason, do we start to see more, like, on, like, offense, defense subs with Reed and I'm in? Like, does Ime ever tap that button? Because it feels like if he's going to close with Reed, like, both of them are just going to be on the floor. But in theory, you do have, you still have Tari Eason. Like, you have a bunch of perimeter defenders to where if you want to go, okay, it's a defensive possession, Reed, get out of here, I'm in, you're in. It's an offensive possession, Reed, get in here, I'm in, they put their centers on you. Let's just chill with that. That optionality exists at the very least. I am curious to see if Ime gets into that bag.
Understood. Did you have a final Houston Rockets thought? That's it?
Oh, boy. That's it for that. The defense is so incredibly good and so incredibly fun. And I've been intrigued by, it's a continuation of them just being a physical group, a switchable group. They've ramped up their pressure this year. Like, you've talked about the recent matchup against the Detroit Pistons, against the OKC Thunder. Like, they are blitzing ball screens more often than they did last year, which I find interesting. And this is also tied into, we are going to cross match. We're going to have Şengün staying low on the floor. We're going to put him on a non-shooter, and we can just kind of muck things up elsewhere. And so, like, I still have a high level of belief in this defense, Steve. This is what is going to bring them to the dance. That'd be, I guess, just my general thought there. Like, this is why they are as good as they are. Like, the defense is absurd. They have so many guys that they can throw at you.
The defense is their bread and butter, and it's going to be very strong in the playoffs. And so that defense being so strong gives you the wiggle room to kind of navigate some of these offensive issues that they've tried to figure out throughout the season. But what I will say is there will be no defense if you don't stick with us after this break. We are coming back with some unrivaled thoughts, folks.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time for some unrivaled thoughts as we preview the upcoming slate of games. The Friday slate, Steve, is special. For the first time, Unrivaled takes their business on the road. They are in Philadelphia, much to the joy of Kalia Copper of Rose BC and Natasha Cloud of Phantom BC, both residents of Philadelphia. They have been having all of the fun taking their teammates and just members of the roster around, showing them all around Philadelphia. So that's been cool. Still plenty of snow, but they're having a blast there. So that part's been cool. That's just heading into the weekend, Steve. What are you most excited about?
I'm excited to see the Phantom play the Breeze, because I feel like both these teams are in different places now than they were at the start of the season. And I feel like the environment will bring the best out of both teams. And so for me, with Breeze BC, I'm trying to see, okay, how much of the versatility pops against the Phantom? Can they put different people in action? Can they take away the bigs, and can they bother Kelsey Plum? And can they put her in action? That's where it gets intriguing to me. Will the Phantom be able to have that kind of level of defense to bother the Breeze's scorers? And then also, okay, you want to go one big, double big? That's not really a problem to us because we can attack. That's probably the most interesting matchup to me, especially if we're looking at tonight.
Okay. No, I think that's fair. Like, that is the first matchup of the Friday slate, also the most exciting one for me, for all the reasons that you mentioned. Like, I think the guard play in this one should be phenomenal. Like, you have Kelsey Plum, you have Paige Bueckers. Like, naturally, it's going to be fun. But the different coverages that these two defenses are willing to throw, and to your point, what line of alignments are we going to have here? Like, how much double big do we see? Because we got to see last week, for the first time, Don Belong and Cam Brink play together. How much are we going to see of that? When you look at this Phantom group, they are very comfortable playing Kiki Arifin and Aaliyah Boston together. And they've been fruitful when they have played those two together, Steve. And so, like, that's going to be a fun mini battle there. The bench surge should be interesting. I think something that's kind of gone under the radar with Phantom, because I mentioned Natasha Cloud being obviously excited to be back in Philly and things. Natasha Cloud has just kind of been shooting the leather off the ball all unrivaled season. And I don't feel like that's really been discussed all that much. Because you think of the Taj Cloud, you think of the drives, you think of the defense, naturally, because you can guard a little bit of everything. And teams are mostly like, okay, well, if you beat us from three, then you beat us from three. She's been up for the challenge so far this year. So, like, I do wonder if we get to, like, this third quarter, as important as it is, because that sets up the winning score in the fourth. And once we get into the fourth quarter, like, hey, man, you can't just duck under Natasha Cloud because she's willing to fire. And if you switch, especially if the Phantom are going into some of their two big alignments, Kiki can seal your tail off. Aaliyah can seal your tail off. Like, you're just giving up looks. So, like, I do kind of wonder, and, like, that lineup in particular has been very good for Phantom BC. Like, if they close that way, like, how are you guarding that group? Is it switching? Are you putting two on the ball against the Taj Cloud? I don't think you want to do that. It's going to be a fun little game within the game there. And then even to the – oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to – no, continue. I have one question after you're done.
Okay. No, I was going to float to the Rose Lunar Owls matchup, which that was the opening night game, the ring ceremony game. Azaray Stevens said, hey, I'm here in the first quarter. Chelsea Gray in the second and third quarter said, I am extra here. And that game was over in quick order. I do wonder, they didn't have Skylar Diggins in that matchup, which as Skylar was doing some media, I think on Thursday, she revealed that she was playing with two torn meniscus last year, which she was still good for the Storm last season. So that's kind of nuts that she played through that. But seems to be rounding into form and not too far removed from like a 27-point performance off the bench. So I do wonder, as I teased on the last episode, like, are we going to see Skylar in the starting lineup soon? Because she just seems to be in a better place physically, and she's playing better now. Yeah, that caught me off guard. How much does she change this matchup? It's kind of like my big picture question there. And I always just kind of wonder, like, how impactful are the bigs going to be for Rose BC? Because when they are there, that takes a little bit of pressure off of Chelsea Gray to do everything for that offense. They can just poke at things and pick and roll. You mismatch Hunt a little bit. Those are kind of like my keys heading into that one.
Well, my question was going to be, can the Lunar Owls find a Hootie or a Who in this matchup? I think they can score. I think the biggest thing is they're going to have to take away the Rose's bigs and keep the pressure on Chelsea Gray. It can't be Chelsea Gray is hurting us, and also we can't guard their bigs. That's an unsustainable formula. But I think if you're the Lunar Owls, they've been competitive. Has not necessarily gotten the wins that they want, but if Skylar's healthy, and we now have Skylar, Aaliyah Edwards, Marina Mabry getting buckets, we just need the defense to come along the ride. So can we get Rebecca Allen in a good place? Can we get Timmy in a good place? Can we kind of just have a little more versatility? Or are we just going to be, hey, here's our three bucket getters. Deal with our three bucket getters. Hopefully we don't turn the ball over.
Yeah, because the turnovers have gotten them in trouble for most of the season, honestly. And again, a good bit of that is they didn't have Skylar. And so naturally, like, you are missing like your literal point guard in that point. But I am excited to see what that part is going to look like, Steve. And just kind of previewing the rest of the weekend. Saturday, we get Laces Vinyl, which kind of brings me to, I want to be in a better place with this Vinyl offense. Because, like, you look at them on paper. Okay.
No, I was gonna say, what do you mean by that? I'm intrigued by that statement. What do you mean by that?
Like, it's three straight games where they're under 80 in terms of the scoring production. I think their highest over the last three games was 71. But it's just like you have Ryan Howard, who can score in a myriad of ways, can be used in a bunch of ways. De'Erica Hamby can be a pick and roll threat, a pick and pop threat. She can seal you. She runs fast and hard in transition. You get easy buckets there. In theory, you have a pair of guards that can get downhill or can get to the mid-range game whenever you want to. And it just feels like there are loud stretches of every game for them, particularly the second or the third quarter, where they just can't get into anything good. The tempo bogs down because of physicality or switching, and the shot selection gets a little bit iffy from their high usage players. And then it just kind of snowballs from there. And so I just kind of wonder, like, broader picture, like, when are they going to find a consistent rhythm with what they want to attack offensively and how quickly they want to do so? And then facing a Laces team that 6-1, best record in the league right now, and they have defenders everywhere. Can they even find that against the Laces in particular? Because when they faced off on opening day, they scored a whopping 42 points in that matchup. So I have some questions and some concerns.
Well, I think the Vinyl, it's more, okay, the idea of what we could do in this format versus what we've actually done. Because in theory, if Ryan Howard's making shots, you're having a bad day. We've seen De'Erica Hamby. What happens when she gets buckets? Courtney Williams should, in theory, be a bucket getter. How many of the buckets have been gotten at times when they need them to be gotten? And how many times have they gone into a fourth quarter in a position where, like, oh no, this is tough? They got to find a way to just compete in those third quarters and allow for the roster that they have to put pressure on these teams, because you should, in theory, even if you're slower in the mud, you got bucket getters. They're just not getting buckets right now. It's a lot of 5 of 12, 5 of 13, 7 of 13, 6 of 10, right? Like, you should look, you go up and down that roster, that team should be scary in 3-on-3 just by attacking. How many of them are winning drives? How many of them are getting the paint? And how many times have we seen pull-ups? That, to me, is the inconsistency of the vinyl.
Yeah, it's been a weird blend. Like, I didn't anticipate at this point of the season, like, I feel better about their defense than their offense. Like, that's not what I would have figured just looking at the roster. But this is something that they have to figure out as we've kind of reached the midpoint of the season. So I am intrigued there, Steve. Breeze Rose on Sunday seems to be another marquee. And if you remember the earlier matchup, the Rose one, that was 73-69 with Chelsea Gray saying, actually, we are going to win this basketball game. And you can't do anything about it. And so I'm excited to see another rematch of that one. I was very excited about the Paige-Chelsea matchup. That should be a good one, Steve. Plenty of star power in that matchup.
Okay. So I have a question.
Okay.
I'm going to peel the curtain back. It looks like in this document it says you have statistics. Would you like to share that with the class?
I have a few, Steve. I have come into contact with some lineup data, Steve, and I have been intrigued by what some of these lineups have been. And so as of recording, entering the weekend slate, there have been 20 lineups that have played at least 20 minutes so far this season.
Okay.
Steve, and a surprise to everyone, I'm sure, the best lineup in Unrivaled so far has been Veronica Burden, Alicia Gray, and Brianna Stewart. They are plus 83 in 52 minutes together. They have been absolutely nuts. They have a 184 offensive rating in their time on the court together, which is not supposed to be possible. And like, that's also been the fun to be like looking at some of the lineup stuff. It's 3-on-3. Like, obviously it's just a different format from 5-on-5. So like trying to calibrate, okay, what is a good offensive rating and what is a good defensive rating? I think in any context, if you're talking 184, like what on earth are you supposed to do about that? The worst lineup to this point, it's coming from High BC. Kelsey Mitchell, Sonny Citron, Monique Billings. They're minus 52 in 24 minutes so far this year. Only a 107.5 offensive rating. You've talked a lot about, hey, they need to be able to get some buckets. That group in particular has struggled to do so, and that bleeds into transition defense in this kind of format. So that's tough. That part has been tough. What really intrigued me, Steve, what I really want to dig into when I was able to get this, we've talked a lot about the double big alignments. What are these teams looking like when they go double big? First, to peel the curtain back, I had no idea what to do with the Mist because we haven't gotten Atlanta plus Lee yet. And it's like Stewie's kind of like the big in her lineups, but like she's a forward. She's a four, but like she can play big, but I don't know what to do with her. So I didn't know what to do with her lineup combinations.
Well, that's a double big lineup if Stewie's in there. Like, respect the size, respect the wingspan. She's not a three.
Like, she can be. I mean, she can function as a big. But I'm just like, I don't think of Brianna Stewart just as a big. Like, it was a similar bit with Alyssa Thomas. I was like, okay, what do I do with Alyssa Thomas? She's a front court player. But, like, is she a big per se? I didn't know what to do with that when we talk about double big. I was thinking more, like, traditional power forward center or just two centers. And so, with parsing through that, talked a little bit about the Kiki-Aaliyah duo. They played roughly 19 minutes together. They're plus 6 in their minutes together overall across their lineups. The Azaree Stevens, Shakira Austin double big lineup, they're plus 22 in about 15 minutes. And the Chelsea Azaree Shakira lineup in particular is plus 24 in 10 minutes, which kind of absurd what they've been able to put together. Aaliyah Edwards and Timmy Fac-Bentley together, a neutral net rating or neutral plus minus rather in 14 minutes. Dom and Cam minus 2 in 4 minutes. Monique Billings and Ezzie Matt-McGore plus 2 in a minute. They've done that once. So those are your double big lineups right now. We have not seen De'Erica Hamby and Brittany Griner together yet for the vinyl. As mentioned, I didn't know what to do with the Mist yet. And similar bit with the Laces. I will say Nas plus AT plus 23 in 14 minutes seems to be pretty good across their lineups. Like, their second unit in general really intrigues me. So I'll say Maddie Seeger's been there. Like, she's been good for them. So I was like, okay, so this is what the double big lineups are looking like right now, Steve. And then I have a bit of trivia for you.
Well, before we get to the trivia, do we have any small lineups that we like? Do we have any small lineups that we enjoy?
We can go back to the best lineup if we want. Like, I'll tell you what. Because, like, what do you do with Veronica Bird and Alicia Craven? That's just nasty. Okay, Steve. But as of recording, there are three players with a true shooting percentage over 70 right now in the league. And to give you a hint, two front court players, one back court player, none of them are on the same team. But there are three of them. Can you guess who those three players are?
I probably can't, but I'm going to try my best. Is Chelsea Gray one of them?
Chelsea Gray leads unrivaled in true shooting, a 76.7 true shooting percentage for her this year, which is insane. Fantastic. With her shot profile.
Fantastic. Is Aaliyah Edwards one of them?
Aaliyah Edwards is not one of them, but she is one of the 15 players with a true shooting over 60.
That's hurtful to my soul. Paige Beckers?
Paige Beckers, no. She's at 67. She is sixth in the league.
I'm in danger. Audience, I'm in danger. You said no. I'm gonna do this. I'm stubborn. Home Depot. Maddie Segrist.
Maddie Segrist on the list of 15, but not in the top three.
I'm in danger. Okay, give me a hint.
Two front court players. I've talked about one. I've talked about both of them. In this segment already.
It can't be Stewie, because you would have said that in a different spot.
Yes, it is not Stewie.
Dom Malonga? Three-point shooting.
Dom on the list of 15, but not in the top three. Actually, yeah, Dom is 15th, funny enough.
This is outrageous.
I believe in you, Gil. I believe in you.
I don't know if we, Maddie Segrist?
You've already said Maddie Segrist, sadly. deeply unfortunate. I believe
this is you shouldn't believe right now. You should not believe at all.
You're gonna be mad.
I am gonna be upset. I'm gonna tap out and take my L. What we got?
All right. So you guessed Chelsea Gray, who's number one in true shooting, a 76.7, which is absurd. Number two with a 76 true shooting, Brittany Griner, who has made all the shots, hasn't gotten all the minutes. I told you you're going to be mad. And number three, Steve, Alyssa Thomas with a 71.6. Has not taken many shots, but has made them when she has.
Failure.
And so those are your three. I had a lot of fun. Some other notables, Jackie Young at 65.4, Alicia Gray at 63.9. Brittany Sykes, who we talked about in the last episode, 62.3. Has made plenty of big shots for the Laces, but yeah, just wanted to give you a little bit of trivia and a little bit of lineup data.
That's well done.
I'm sorry to disappoint. Do any of the other matchups intrigue you, but are there any other notes that you want to hit on across these matchups coming up this weekend?
I still think it's wild the Phantom are plus 40 in point differential, but they are fifth. And unrivaled. Mm-hmm. And so this what's the separation going to be between the Rose, the Breeze, and the Phantom? And then remember, it's top six go to the playoffs. So Luna Rouse feels like they're very out of this. They're only a game out. So what happens there? Like, can the Hive score? Can the Vinyl figure out how to score? Are you going to keep the Luna Rouse out of this? That's where my intrigue goes. I think the Mists have separated. I think the Laces, obviously, with their competitive nature. Who's going to take that three spot? Is it the Rose? Is it the Breeze? The Phantom? That's where I'm like, okay, as we get deeper into this, you know, it gets competitive, it gets tricky, teams win, teams lose.
Okay, I think that's fair. Last thing I'll note, circling to Monday, we'll get to talk about that on the next episode on Tuesday. It closes with Miss Laces, which, if you remember that game, is an 83-81 win for the Miss in one of the most ridiculous fourth quarters that we have seen in this unrivaled season, and I would wager in unrivaled period. It just felt like a 20-minute back and forth. I just had no idea who's going to win that game. Very competitive. Mm-hmm. A lot of defense to close that game out. A lot of physicality, a lot of fouls to close that game out as well, but it's just like, huh. So I'm excited to see that one ran back, Steve. That should be good stuff. we're going to see all of the defense, all of the shot making. We're going to see all the inverted pick and rolls. Are you switching? Are you not? That's honestly probably like my matchup of the weekend. With all due respect to, like, obviously the Philadelphia matchups are going to be fun on Friday. We got some good stuff coming. Missed laces are probably the one for me. I want everybody to stay healthy. Last thing I would add on the Philadelphia front, because this is the first time that an unrivaled game is being played outside of Miami. What do these teams look like in their next games? Like, this is travel, you know, and then back to Miami. So, like, what is the recovery like? Do we see different minute distribution in this game? Do we see different minute distribution in the next game because they're recovering? Like, I just have literally no idea what the effects are going to be on this front. So I'm curious to see.
Basketball players play basketball. They have their recovery routines and they play basketball again.
They do. I mean, yes, I'm just saying, like, it's an offseason league. Like, it's just a different style. You know what I mean? Like, I know the context, like, the literal sense of we play a game on a day and then we play a day and a half later is not new for basketball players. But this is a different league. It's a different context. So that's where I'm just like, what are the effects of this? That's all.
Technology, recovery machines, pretty good. Good meal, good sleep. Hydration.
Hydration. You know what? On that note, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe and hydrate. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast and or your water, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can catch me on socials at TheKaiasNBA. You can catch Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.